Chapter 3. The task he had set himself was futile. Behrazi knew this. Even so, he tried to divine the reasons behind Krevan's move. 8th Company was back at its original base in the land to the south of Reclamation. Behrazi stood outside the command tent, waiting for the Shadow Captain to finish speaking with the commanders of the other missions. Contact had been re-established with Temur Khan and the White Scars. This was a good sign. Being outside the city, with the Eldar inside, on the other hand, was less reassuring. The situation was also too bizarre for Behrazi to dismiss it as a disaster. They had not been forced out, after all. The departure had been Krevan's decision. It was the most baffling one that Behrazi had ever known him to make. "The orcs have a long road to travel," Krevan had said, as the Raven Guard and the Eldar discussed strategy. "But they will come. We need a more detailed sense of the environs." The leader of the Eldar had said something to Alathanas. "The city must be protected," he had translated. And then Krevan had said, "We will leave it in your care." The reaction among the other Raven Guard was one of acute discomfort. The move went against every instinct. It had also not gone over well with the authorities in Reclamation. Governor Kesmir had come to meet the 8th Company as it marched towards the southern exit from the city. He had been accompanied by Cardinal Reithner. The Ecclesiarch had been apoplectic. Krevan had stood and listened to the duo's remonstrations for precisely 1 minute. At the 61st second, he had said, "My decision is final." Then he had resumed walking and ignored the indignant squawks of the two mortals. They had howled, and the selfishness of their fears had been so clear that Behrazi had, for a moment, rejoiced in the fact that he and his brothers were leaving these two bellowing non-combatants to what they believed to be their fates. Now, though, his concern had returned with a vengeance. Around him, most of the other sergeants were pacing. Some spoke in groups of two or three, others kept their thoughts to themselves. Caeligus moved between all of them, demanding answers that none could give. At last he reached Behrazi's position. "What is he thinking?" Caeligus said. "You don't really expect me to know that." "Do you realize what we're risking?" Caeligus wasn't listening. "How can we walk away from..." "Brother," Behrazi interrupted. He clamped a hand on Caeligus's shoulder, hard enough to jolt the other out of his rant. "Yes, I am aware of the risk."
"We have to do something," Behrazi hissed. "What are you saying?"
Now he was furious. Caeligus was one very small step away from outright mutiny. The other sergeant seemed to realize this. He looked at Behrazi as if he hadn't been seeing him properly until this moment.
"Your pardon, brother," he said. "I don't know what I was saying."
"Clearly not."
Caeligus sighed. "That was frustration and ignorance talking, not me."
"It was your voice."
"Yes." He paused, looking towards the lights of Reclamation.
"But why in the name of the Emperor would he have us leave the city?"
"The city is not the mission," Behrazi said.
He felt that he was on the edge of revelation.
"What?"
"The city is not our mission. It never was. Remember the larger goal, brother. The orcs are our target. And even then, in the service of luring the Overfiend."
"In that context, the city is unimportant. We could achieve our strategic ends even if the city were destroyed."
"Maybe," Caeligus admitted. But how is our greater purpose served by leaving the Eldar in control?
Behrasi had no answer. He knew he was right, though. He struggled to grasp the truth that hovered just at the limit of his reach. Krevan stepped out of the command tent.
"Please join me, brother sergeants," he said.
Inside, the Tacticarium table's hololith was showing the landscape to the east and north of Reclamation.
"The greenskins have been busy," Krevan said. "So have our allies. Vox contact has been restored. The White Scars have destroyed their manufactorum on the moon. They have also managed to kill a powerful orc psyker."
"That is welcome news," Sergeant Clijun said.
"Not all of it is. The orc engineer escaped. Temur Khan believes that it has teleported to a planet-side location."
Kyligus said, "I don't see how a single orc tech is of much concern."
"This one is. You have paid attention to the tanks we have seen here?"
"They do seem bigger and more resilient," Kyligus admitted, "but they are not indestructible."
"But do you know how the orc heavy armor has been arriving on Lepidus?"
Krivan asked.
"It was being teleported. Do you know what powered the teleporter? A device that turned dozens of captured Eldar psykers into a massive battery."
"An orc did that?"
Behrasi was stunned.
"In cooperation with the witch, yes."
"If the manufactorum is destroyed," Kyligus said, "surely the principal means by which this orc could trouble us are gone too."
Krivan gave him a sharp look.
"Do you speak from a position of knowledge, Brother Sergeant?"
"No."
Kyligus looked defiant.
"I am basing my conclusion on what we do know."
"What we know is that these orcs are far more unpredictable, powerful, and resourceful than we could have imagined. They had a stomper on the moon. I, for one, would have been surprised by the sudden arrival of that war machine. Surprise is what we inflict on our enemies. I do not accept being subject to it."
He turned from Kyligus and addressed the sergeants as a group.
"We will assume that the greenskin engineer is here and active in the orc campaign. Expect an increase in heavy armor."
Kyligus looked like he was on the verge of saying something more. Behrasi willed him to silence. Kyligus seemed to read his mind. He closed his mouth. Krivan returned to the table. The hololith had a line running, tracing the circular route the orc army would have to take to get around the gorge. The greenskins had gone north from the fallen bridge. That meant dozens of kilometers before the land dropped enough for it to be possible to ford the river. After that, the orcs would still have to travel far to the east, as the north boundary of the city was a sharp escarpment. Even allowing for the faster speed of these orcs, it was unlikely that the shortest route would bring them close to besieging Reclamation before daylight.
"This," Krivan said, "is what the expected route of the greenskins would look like. It is not good enough. We cannot expect anything of these orcs. If our intelligence is not first-hand and based on direct observation, it is useless. So we will observe. Brother sergeants, your squads will fan out from the eastern gate of Reclamation. Sergeant Behrasi, your squad will attempt to intercept on the likely route. The rest of you will spread out further to the northeast. When one squad makes contact, the rest will close in."
He held his hand out, palm up, fingers splayed. He slowly made a fist.
"In this way, we will crush the greenskins," he said.
"What will the Eldar be doing?"
Zorbak asked. sending out scouting units as well, according to our agreement.
Units,
Behrasi repeated. What about their main force?
Remaining in the city, protecting it.
And what else will they be doing there?
Caeligus demanded. His tone was accusatory.
You really can't help yourself, can you? Behrasi thought.
Caeligus sometimes accused him of excessive caution. In moments like this, though, it was Caeligus who demonstrated excess.
Behrasi took the example of the captain to heart. Action was based on information. The better the intelligence, the more devastating the attack.
Behrasi sometimes wondered, as he did now, whether Caeligus's desire for information only extended to the point of confirming what he had already decided.
Your question is an excellent one, Brother Sergeant,
Krivan said to Caeligus. His patience was more withering than his earlier sharp tone,
which is why I will be observing them.
Alathanas and Passavan walked a step behind Eleira. They were nearing the center of the city. The human construction was becoming denser and more elaborate. The scale of the task ahead was increasing. So were its complexities. So were its risks.
They've changed so much, Eleira said. I can see traces of what was once here, but our records will be useless.
They were never going to be sufficient, Passavan pointed out. This was a maiden world. The city was constructed, but never settled. As for what we seek, it wouldn't be on the surface,
Alathanas said.
Precisely, and all we know is what the surface once was.
Eleira stopped in an intersection. She turned around slowly.
How do they live like this? She said. What have they done?
On three of the corners rose more of the human habitations. They were dark monuments of rockcrete. Their windows were like the firing apertures of fortifications. Faces appeared in some of them. They were suspicious, frightened, and furtive as rats. The people of Reclamation, believing themselves abandoned and invaded, sought strength in their prison-like homes. Relief sculptures of the double-headed eagle of the human emperor dominated the facades. There were other figures, too, that Alathanas surmised also had some kind of religious significance. The overwhelming impression was of a race whose spirit was imprisoned by its manifestations of material power. On the fourth corner was a place of worship. In its massive, glowering oppression, it was not different in kind from the habitation complexes, but merely in degree. It was worse. It was their inspiration. It was the enforcer. The eagle detached itself from the wall, became iron, and spread its wings over the portico. Humans, the ranger thought, spared no effort in celebrating what crushed them. And yet there were individuals who encouraged him to hope. Over the decades of his travels, there were humans whom he felt he could call friends. Those connections, impossible in principle, were the shining fragments that shielded him from despair. He did not expect friendship from the Raven Guard, but he had to believe in the chance of honest cooperation. If that existed, these orcs might be defeated. The alternative was so dreadful it had to be denied. Neither he nor anyone else on this planet could afford to believe in the most likely outcome of the war.
The changes are too great, Passavan said. I cannot tell if the entrance we seek still exists. Perhaps it never did. We don't know what happened to the Exodites who began the settlement. Their work was surely incomplete. If there were an entrance, the Monkai would have found it.
Elaira started walking again, moving up the street past the church. She was looking closely at the foundations of the buildings, at the vanishing traces of the Eldar city that had stood there and been erased by the millennia without ever truly living.
"The question of the entrance is irrelevant," she said. "That is not what we are seeking. We need a location first. Farseer, you carry our hopes." "I wish I could fulfill them."
Passavan's grief was profound.
"You must."
Passavan glanced at Alathanas as if looking for his support.
"What you ask is beyond my reach."
"Merentellas and Elisat both know."
"And only they know. They have travelled the path of the seer much longer than I have. Their sight extends far beyond mine." "If they are still alive," Alathanas said.
Elaira ignored him.
"We are all being tasked with the impossible," she told the Farseer.
Passavan looked back at the church. He frowned and stopped walking.
"You think it might be under that?"
Alathanas asked. The irony would be disturbing.
"No, I thought I saw..."
His eyes moved over the wings of the eagle. That seemed to satisfy him.
"I'm wrong,"
he said, and moved on. Alathanas scrutinized the face of the church. He trusted Passavan's skills. He also valued his own. He looked for movement or an anomalous shadow. But no, the Farseer was right. There was nothing there. He scanned for another minute before he was certain, then walked after the others. He stopped just as he caught up and looked again. There was only the night pooling around the doorways. The night watched the Eldar continue north away from the cathedral. Krivan remained as motionless as the stones around him until the trio were almost out of sight. Then he spoke softly into his vox bead.
"What do you see?"
"Several other small groups are roaming the streets." Techmarine Thane had taken up a position on the roof of one of the tallest habs in the south-central zone of Reclamation. He and Krivan had approached directly from 8th Company's encampment. There was a delicious edge to the challenge of going so deeply into the shadows that even the Eldar could not see them. Thane did not venture far into Reclamation, as Krivan needed his eyes from the commanding heights of the tower. From there, the Techmarine had a view of the square where the Eldar had established their base and a good perspective on the central avenues. Krivan wanted to be closer. He had spotted Alathanas and his companions heading towards the cathedral. He had chosen his post in the recesses of the portico and waited. His Death Watch years had left him with some knowledge of the Eldar tongue. It was not enough for him to follow the conversation as the trio paused in the intersection. He was able to pick up some fragments, though. They were searching for something. That much he gathered. He noticed the way the leader was examining the buildings as they left. He asked Thane,
"Are the groups on patrol?"
"No, Shadow Captain. I have used high magnification to look at the ones that passed the closest to my position. They appear very interested in the foundations of the buildings."
"Thank you,"
Krivan said. He was grateful. Thane's observations dovetailed with his own. There was a pattern now to the Eldar behavior. Why the foundations?
"We must protect the city."
The foundations of Reclamation were older than what was built upon them.
"Which city are you protecting?"
Krivan wondered. Answers blossomed before him. They were dark ones,
but they explained much. If an Eldar city had once stood here, it made more sense that the Saim Han had been so desperate to preserve it.
More sense? No, that wasn't quite true. Less irrational? Yes, that was closer to the mark. He could understand the location having an importance to the Xenos. But their willingness to lay down their lives for something that had long since been erased almost completely from the face of Lepidus was still not explained. Their search was not for traces of the city itself. They were looking for something contained within the city. Whatever this prize was, it was worth any sacrifice. And if Eldar lives were less important than this goal, what of the humans who now lived here? The answer was easy. They were less than nothing. Krivan felt no outrage. If reclamation had to burn in order to defeat the orcs, then it would burn. He would take no pleasure in such an event, though, and he would seek to avoid it. What was impermissible was that the Eldar harmed the subjects of the Emperor in the pursuit of their own ends. The treachery of their race was rising to the surface, as he had known it would. Thane must have reached some of the same conclusions. He voxed,
"Will we be attacking them?"
"Not until we have dealt with the orcs. The Eldar will still be useful in that endeavor. But we should make some preparations for afterwards. How populated is the camp?" He waited while Thane carried out more observations.
"Very few of the Eldar remain. A skeleton guard."
Either they were not expecting an attack, or they were arrogant in their estimation of their capacity to spot an enemy's approach. Krivan was not surprised. The Eldar seemed unable to grasp the ability of the Raven Guard to wraith slip. They looked at the power armor and saw only juggernauts. Good.
"Any likely targets?" he asked Thane. "Many. The vehicles are on the outer perimeter of the camp."
Of course, for rapid deployment. That would make his task easier. Krivan debated following Alathanas. He decided against it. As shadow-cloaked as he had been, both the Ranger and the Psyker had become aware of something. He would not tempt fate. The longer the Eldar did not think that he was actively moving against them, the better. Their cooperation was still useful, and their actions would be more revealing if they believed themselves unobserved by any eyes that mattered. Better not to give them the chance of suspicion. Whatever they were seeking, they did not know where to find it.
"Meet me at the tower base," he told Thane. "Have the equipment ready."
Krivan made his way back to the Tech Marine's position with the same care that he had used in reaching the cathedral. The Eldar search parties were not in this sector, as far as he and Thane knew. Krivan assumed that they didn't know enough. He anticipated the enemy's gaze at every step. He factored in the chance looks of mortals at their windows. He was hidden, a massive shadow among shadows, a heavily armored silence moving in on prey. No matter how circuitous his route, he would complete his hunt. Dawn was still an hour away when he reached the Hab Tower. The night pressed down on reclamation with the full weight of the siege to come. Thane stood against the facade in the dark between two of the street's lumen globes. He was holding the melter bombs. Krivan examined them.
"Near the engines of the skimmers," he said. "That is correct, Shadow Captain. Inside would be best."
"But any location where they are unlikely to be discovered, at any rate. There is no chance in their being triggered accidentally."
Thane shook his head.
The detonators will not function unless they receive the signal that I send them.
Good. He did ask himself, as the flow of shadows took him towards the Eldar encampment, if there was any situation that would not result in his ordering Thane to set off the bombs. He didn't think there was. If the Eldar betrayed the Raven Guard during battle with the Orcs, he would kill them and their vehicles. If they remained trustworthy to the end of the war, there was still the question of reclamation. The Eldar wanted something here. Victory against the Orcs would change nothing. The Saim Han would have to be expelled by force. This was the simple truth of the matter. Crevan found it interesting, all the same, that he even considered the question. The extermination of the Xenos had been a given in the Death Watch. He wondered why he engaged in this speculation at all. Because you can, he thought. Because the orders come from you, not the Inquisition. He had the luxury of acting with the full knowledge of why the actions were called for and what purpose they served. He was proud of his achievements, now over 2 centuries in the past, in the Death Watch. He had been less enamored of how the true purpose of the missions had often been shrouded from his vision. He understood the motivation behind the secrecy. He understood its utility. He had chafed at being subject to it. Now he made use of it. He wielded it as he would any other weapon. He reached the square. Crouching in the darkness, cast by the squat hab block, he was only a few meters from the perimeter of Eldar vehicles. He slowed his breathing and heartbeats. He became the thing that the eye passed over as it moved between points of interest. He watched the movements of the Eldar. They had patrols along the edge of the camp. There were few guards, but the timing of their circuits was complex. They didn't appear to move at a constant speed. It was difficult to predict when he would fall in a blind spot. The minutes to dawn fell away. He was patient, unhurried. There was time. He would not need long. When the moment came, he was moving even before his conscious mind noted the opportunity. He crossed the open space, slipping between the overlapping gazes of the guards. He reached the vehicles, staying low and motionless before the Viper. He waited for the next opportunity, then moved along the skimmer's nose and fixed a melter bomb to the underside of the fuselage where it joined the short, angular wings. Stillness again. Then a shift among shadows. A bomb attached beneath the engine of a jet bike. He repeated the pattern. He was never where the Eldar looked. He was engaged in a duel that he would lose if his opponent ever realized that battle was engaged. He respected the Eldar's perception, and he thwarted it. The operation took an hour. The sky was lightening as he headed back to meet Thane. The tide of darkness was receding. It was still more than deep enough. He did more than evade the Eldar's sight. He smashed its power. When he rejoined the Tech Marine, he completed an act of war that would not be known until he chose. The shadows had planted a gladius in the heart of the Eldar. He had killed them. He would let them sustain the illusion of life only for as long as it suited him to do so.
As they headed back to 8th Company's base, Thane asked, "Is there any chance we will not use what you have prepared?"
That question again. No, Crevan started to say. He changed his mind.
If the Eldar prove trustworthy,
you will not have to send that signal.
No chance, then,
Thane said. A thought crossed Krivan's mind. It was close to being a doubt. Was he setting impossible conditions? Was it possible that he was acting dishonorably? Before he could answer himself or the Tech Marine, Kyligus's voice came over the vox. His tone was urgent. The background noise was chaotic. Then it resolved into the roar of a gigantic engine. And that was much worse.